And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, I tell you, we're going to have a great program today. I got a very interesting guest, my good friend Mike King from, the state of New Jersey. And Mike, is the author of The Bad War that some of you have purchased. And then we're offering this month the book on Vladimir Putin. We're always hearing how Putin of Russia is a monster, a tyrant, a madman, a new Hitler. But they never give us a reason for it. Well, Mike King has written a book, and we are offering that too, about Putin. And, you know, being the leader of the Christian world, as many people believe Putin is, that can make a lot of people hate you, especially the Obama administration and their rogues. I don't know if you call it a squadron or a brigade or whatever of hardcore lesbians and homosexuals. That's probably the main reason why they're opposed to Putin, because to me, he's a little bit of a hero. And to many Christians, he's a hero. I'm not saying he's the greatest guy in the world, but anyway, get that book by Mike King, M.S. King, and you'll see why I say that about Putin. In fact, I think he should be given the Nobel Peace Prize for what he's done to help in the Middle East to stop the juggernaut of genocide that's being perpetrated by the United States and Israel. But anyway, today we've got a different subject. Actually, it's a bigger subject. It's a more important topic. It's about these two great books that we have now in the ministry we're offering by Mike King. And I'll tell you, they're knockouts. I wish we had 20 hours to cover these books. Let me just tell you about them. They're volumes. They're two volumes. They're big books. You don't start like Tex Mars Productions. They're huge books, sort of like an encyclopedia. In fact, you're going to have an encyclopedia of world history from a revisionist standpoint. In other words, from a truthful standpoint, because that's what Mike King does. He takes history and he looks for the truthful elements, and that's what you get. Now you get all these establishment hacks out there, and they're going to feed you a bunch of lies. So as Henry Ford, the great industrialist, once said, when asked about history, he simply said, "History is bunk, B-U-N-K. It was a pretty good word, meaning nonsense. But it's real. It's history is great, and all of us enjoy world history when we read it from somebody who's written it with a love of the truth in mind. And that's what Mike King does. Now, let me tell you very quickly, because I want to get Mike right on the air here. Volume one is Planet Rothschild. That's what this series is about. Planet Rothschild. Well, right there, it tells you about everything you need to know, doesn't it? That Rothschild's involved in the whole planet. The subtitle is The Forbidden History of the New World Order. Now, you may thought the New World Order just came up. Maybe it started with George Herbert Walker Bush, or maybe even with Obama. But no, it's been around a long, long time. We go back to 1776 and the foundation of the Illuminati, and even before that. In fact, Mike King has dated it 1763 to 1939. That's volume one. So we have volume one of Planet Rothschild, and then we go to volume two, Planet Rothschild, The Forbidden History of the New World Order, World War II to 2015. That's today, folks. You see how current this is. That's today. This takes you through wars, revolutions, financial overthrows, through assassinations. I mean, it is incredible. And they're stacked with pictures, thousands of pictures. And it really gives you a bird's eye view of these people and what they're really doing. It's not like some old history book. These are great. These are alive. Planet Rothschild, Volume 1 and 2. Mike King, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Hello, Tex. Thanks for the introduction. Good to be back with you. And you're so right. I mean, these books bring history to life. If anyone's ever fallen asleep in history class during school, trust me, they won't fall asleep reading these books. And seeing these pictures, there's about 1,500 pictures.
I tell you. Let me ask you a quick question here. Let's get to the more simple things, although they're really not quite simple. Now, Volume 1 has a red tint to the cover, and Volume 2 is black. Now, did you do that in mind, or did you just want to... I mean, I think you have a great... These covers are tremendous. I'm not even going to tell... I want them to see my newsletter, and I want them to look at these covers. They grab your eye. But why is one of them tinted red, and the other one is... The second one is tinted black? Is there any reason for that?
No hidden meaning. We just saw... Actually, my illustrator, the great David Dees...
Oh, yes.
...felt that we should slightly differentiate the two, since they're two different volumes.
Did
Others
David...
a different tint to the background.
Did David do the covers for you?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Well, David is a great artist.
I mean, you know, if a picture's worth 1,000 words, the covers that he did are worth 1,000,000 words.
You're right. But the words inside, that's what I'm getting at. The picture just complement what you've written, Mike. Now, I want to tell people, I recommend these books. And really, if you've got a friend, you need to buy them these two books. Later on, we're going to tell you how to get them. And this is not just something we're selling. You know, we don't sell books just to sell books. You can't get powerofprophecy.com or to our newsletter and get the bestsellers. You know, the New York Times bestsellers. That's not what we do. We do books that further the knowledge. Now, I love what you do here. You say, now you can earn your PhD in New World Order Studies. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's right. And that's really what it is. I mean, what your readers need to understand is this is the distillation of years, and I mean years, countless hours of study, research, and independent thought and investigation on my part.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is, all condensed. It's basically taking everything I know and have discovered and put it into very digestible format that people can learn quickly and retain it in a matter of, well, it depends how much time they want to put into it. I mean, some people have told me that they were so engrossed in these volumes that they didn't go out for a few days. They read them sitting down 2 days straight. So there was an enormous amount of time and effort that over many years, and also invested a lot of money in all the books I've read over the years, to kind of put this together, because, you know, Tex, I've read so many great books, so many great authors, but one of the things that's always struck me is so many, you know, even though they're great writers, they don't always get to the point, and you have to go through 1,000 pages just to pull out a few powerful nuggets. And I don't mince words, I don't waste words or pictures. Everything in here is like a punch to the jaw, and there's thousands of them in these two volumes. So that's the unique contribution here, is to be able to put it all together, but in a way that literally someone who has never even heard of this thing called the New World Order can just pick this up and really come up to speed. And like I said, it's the equivalent of a PhD in New World Order Studies.
Well, you know, it says here in the about the author section of these books, of you, talking about you here, Mike, that you have an irreverent disdain for conventional wisdom and an uncanny ability to ferret out and weave together important data points that others miss. I think that that's an important ability, isn't it, to a disdain for conventional wisdom and combined with an uncanny ability to find things that others miss, and to see how they weave all together so that you really understand the situation.
Yeah, well, I have to say, this is, I don't know, I guess you could call it, lack of a better term, a gift I've had since childhood, is to be able to pick up on things that people miss. I mean, I can look at a magician's trick and half the time figure out what he did. That's just, I mean, even as a child, I'm like, oh, I know how he did that. He's got a trap door there. And I remember as a child, my parents would say, how did you figure that out? I said, I don't know. It just came to me. I do have that ability, and my other challenge is to take what is seemingly complex and to boil it down into, you know, its simple components. Nothing is really complex. The hard part sometimes is figuring it out, but once you have it, you know, I like to explain it in a simple way. And I've always had a disdain for conventional wisdom, too. And sometimes that's got me in trouble, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, I agree with Mark Twain, who once said that whenever he found himself in agreement with the conventional wisdom of the day, he says, I get worried and I check my facts again.
Yeah, when I don't have mail that criticizes me, if I go a couple of weeks without a really hot letter, I say, man,
right.
I'm just not doing things right. I'm not, you know, I love that hot mail. Where is it at? But, you know, I think this is an interesting thing that you're a private investigative journalist. Obviously, you have to be private because I don't know of any institute or publishing company that's going to hire anyone who exposes the New World Order. But, you know, your degree is, of course, from Rutgers University, a fine school. But you've been in advertising and marketing, and so you seem to have a knack or an understanding of how public opinion is manufactured by the elite. We think we believe a certain thing, but they whoosh everything into a paradigm that they have set up. You know, we were discussing here in the ministry the other day, myself and Steve, a gentleman who works here, about the concept of paradigms, you know. To be conspiracy-minded, you're out of the paradigm that they want you to be in. They want you to be in the paradigm where you watch CNN, ABC, Fox News, and you just go along with it all. And you can't understand how the world could be different than that. So when you see these books, you go, oh, that can't be. That's just impossible. Because they're stuck in a paradigm. A paradigm, of course, is a compartment. It's an entire way of thinking. And it really saddles you down. It puts you, you know, in that little boxcar, and you can't get out of it. But you've evidently, Mike, been able to get out of the boxcar. You've been able to look and say, hey, there's a lot of boxcars out there. I'm going to go investigate them. I'm going to discover what's in those other places.
Yeah, well, that's a good way of putting it. I mean, it's a big trick. The real, you know, seduction of this boxcar is that it seemingly gives you choices when it doesn't. And, you know, that goes back to understanding the advertising and the marketing that we talk about. That's what advertising is. I mean, would you like that ship next week, Mrs. Jones, or would you like to take it home today? You know, it's false choice. And they've got the country into two boxes which are part of that same compartment, the left box or the right box. And you can go in either one you want as long as you don't get out of the prison itself.
Yeah, you know, this Donald Trump who's running for president, you know, people are trying to put him in that Republican box, the conservative box, but then suddenly, wait, he's done all those things to support the Democrats, the liberals in the past. He's a guy, too, you can't seem to put in a box. I hope he's for real. We're going to find out pretty quick here.
Yeah.
I know you and I were discussing that he has a lot of Jewish connections and all that, but still, you know, he's a strange, what would you call it, a strange
Wild
character.
Card?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, now let's.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were discussing earlier, Tech. I mean, with all of the other clowns, you know what you're going to get. With
yes.
Trump, we might get a bad deal, but he might go rogue, and who knows? I mean, some of it could be good. I mean, he has the name, he has the money. I'm not endorsing him. I'm not enthusiastic about him in any way. But at least, I mean, it's better to take a chance on something than with an alternative that we know is going to lead to hell. Bush, Clinton, Sanders, Rubio, et cetera. So,
yeah, we know what they believe, don't we? There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all pro-Israel and pro-New World Order. They're a known factor. So maybe we can get something different out of a Trump. We'll find out. Well, let's talk about these books, if we could, just a little bit, Mike. Now, Volume 1, you talk about the Rothschilds. And I guess people out there say, I can't understand how one family, one dynasty called the Rothschilds can be that powerful. How did they, are they really that rich? Are they that powerful? Are they that scheming and calculating? that they can get into the whole world and begin to manipulate and even hide their money. And even to this very day, we know the Rothschilds are incredibly rich in Britain and other chapters of branches of the family. But what about the Rothschilds? What are the factors that you see that have made them what they are today? Are they really that powerful? Are they that rich? Are they that dangerous?
Well, I mean, there's no exaggerating the power of this family. The only thing that's debatable is in the modern day is whether or not that they are at the absolute core of it, or if the power now is shared among, you know, folks like George Soros and others. I mean, who knows? But certainly, you go back to the late 1700s and through the 1800s, they were the beating heart of this thing we call the New World Order. And where that power stems from is the money. When we say that they're wealthy, that's not even an accurate term. I don't think there is a term to describe the level of wealth that they've accumulated. It's something we can't imagine. It's just never-ending, compounding perpetual interest, funding wars, manipulating stock markets. I mean, when Nathan Rothschild, who was the son, who was the first son of the original Rothschild, when he cornered the London stock market and bought it up during the war with Napoleon, he was already the richest man in the world, okay? And from that maneuver, he had advanced knowledge of the outcome of the Battle of Waterloo, you understand? And he played that to crash the market and then buy it up. So he was already the richest man in the world at that time, and he multiplied his fortune a dozen times over just on that one move alone. So it's enough money to literally buy up kings and parliaments and revolutionary movements. You can buy up whatever you want. So you combine that level of wealth with that degree of cunning, demonic cunning. I mean, they are geniuses. There's no doubt about that. You combine the two, and then, you know, you have the makings for this generational conspiracy, which, of course, is aided and abetted by the overall Judaic vision of a new world order.
Mm.
So, in other words, they really didn't invent this thing, but they gave it a rocket booster. So you have the rest of Jewry, which is full of billionaires in its own right, supporting it. And then in time, they made alliances with Anglo-Saxon millionaires and billionaires. So it's a network of networks, immensely wealthy individuals with immense power and influence. And, you know, you could talk about these politicians all you want, but they really amount to nickels and dimes in the pockets of this network. And that's what people have to understand. And if you read my book, one can see how very easily how they were able to pull this off. And then, of course, one more thing, Tex. There's the relentless pressure and time. When you combine time and pressure, even a small-time individual can accomplish great things. So you take the wealth and the power and the cunning, and now you factor in decade after decade after decade after decade, and now you begin to conceptualize the monstrous degree of this thing that is rolling over us.
Well, you know, just taking, as you've done in various parts of these books, the Federal Reserve System, that's pretty ingenious to create money out of thin air, as much as you need. I mean, I was just amazed, really, in 2000, and I had just, you know, read all this and just accepted it. Of course, I read Eustace Mullins' Secrets of the Fed Reserve and other books about the Fed Reserve. But in 2007, when we had the crash here in America, I really began to look at the Fed Reserve. And then they were audited. They claimed that they were given a small audit by the Congress, the first audit ever of the Fed Reserve. And I got a copy of that audit. It's amazing. It was very, you couldn't even get a copy of the audit. I had to go, believe it or not, to Bernie Sanders, the guy's running for president now. And he sent me a copy of the audit of the Fed Reserve. I guess, you know, he's supposedly against that, the Fed Reserve. But I read it, and it was an amazing thing. They gave money to not only the banks, free money. And the banks made money, and they got free money. But they actually gave money at no interest to Messerschmitt, to Volkswagen, McDonald's, the restaurant chain.
Wow, yeah.
I mean, to you think, oh, well, I can understand General Motors was going. They gave money to General Motors, but then they gave it, you know, Ford claimed, oh, well, we didn't take any government money. They gave money to Ford because all these were secret. They insisted that people take money. Even the corporations that were doing so well, you know, Wendy's and, you know, I don't know, Walmart's and the Targets of this world, they were doing just fine. But they forced them to take free money, you know, just pumping it into the system because they said, we got to get the money going out there, you know, got to get it circulated. So here are these huge corporations that were already making a mint, and they were forced to get this interest-free money. And it's an amazing, of course, all the banks of the world. We gave to Chinese banks, German banks, Swiss banks,
yeah,
Japanese banks. We gave to banks all over the world. And I couldn't believe that.
You know why they do it? Because the system itself is fraudulent. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever attacks the foundation of a fraudulent system. When every dollar in circulation has to be loaned into the economy,
uh-huh,
right, that means that there will always be more debt than there is money in circulation.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Now, every time a loan is repaid, money is leaving the system. So, I mean, think of a bucket with holes in it. The water escaping the holes, well, that's like money being repaid. Those are the loans being repaid. If you don't continually put new water into the bucket, eventually that bucket will be empty. Nobody will have any money. So that's what they're doing. They have to pour water into this bucket full of holes so it doesn't go empty and the economy doesn't crash. So if you understand that analogy, you understand our monetary system. There's so much debt that if you don't keep pumping in more money, eventually, as all the old loans get paid up, money will dry out, and you have a deflationary depression. So either we run out of money like we did in the 30s and we have a huge crash, that was a deflationary depression, or you keep printing the phony money and pumping it in, and you see what's happening with the inflation these days. They say there's no inflation. I don't know if you've been to the grocery store lately. Do you notice everything is shrinking?
Oh, yes, it is. The candy bars. The candy bars look like those little mini bars of the past, don't they?
I bought Oreo cookies the other day, a little six-pack. I mean, they look like tiny crackers. Everything is shrinking. But now here's the thing. If they stop pumping the money in to protect the dollar, then you'll go to the other extreme. The money will start to disappear. The stock market will crash. I mean, it is such a colossal fraud. And nobody ever addresses that. But think of the bucket with holes in it, and you'll understand what a fraud they have erected. And they make money on this. Whether they go inflation or deflation, they make perpetual money on this.
So I would think just from the Fed, they invented the Fed Reserve in 1913 because they had their own banking system before that. That might have been one of the reasons you talk about in your book. You talk about Abe Lincoln, the Civil War, the causes of everything is in these books. I recommend people get them because everything we're going to discuss today and much, much more, you have the forbidden history of the New World Order in these books. Well, let's go to some subject because we can't talk so much, but the Civil War. You know, that's been in the news now, the Black Lives Matters. People want them to take down these statues of Civil War heroes and all that. Now, you talk about the South. Evidently, there was a lot of foreign things going on with France and Russia and Britain, that they were all involved in the Civil War. And in the South had a leader named Judah P. Benjamin, who was right hand in hand, literally, with Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about who is Judah Benjamin.
Well, first, let me say, Tex, I had always been sympathetic to the cause of the South. And, well, you know, I'm a pro-Southern Yankee boy.
Okay.
But, like, as I researched the Rothschild hand in this thing,
mm-hmm,
I've discovered that it's a little bit more complicated than just the, you know, the South wanted to have limited government and not be controlled. I mean, that's part of it, of course. But there's no doubt that the Rothschilds and their American agents were at work in both the North and the South to get to fight each other. Because in spite of the legitimate differences between the two regions, to me, there was nothing that serious that warranted this horrific war breaking out. But you had fanatics and manipulators on both sides. You had people like John Brown in the North murdering innocent people, butchering them. And, you know, understandably, that shocked the people of the South. You had August Belmont in the North. He was the head of the Democrat Party. His name is August Schoenberg. He was a known Rothschild agent. So that's what you had operating in the North. Now, you go to the South, you mentioned Judah Benjamin. You said he was the right-hand man of Jefferson Davis.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go further than that. I'll say he was the handler of Jefferson Davis. And I don't, I'm not saying Davis was a wicked man or an agent. Could be. But at the very least, he was manipulated by this Judah Benjamin, who was, by all accounts, a very brilliant man, a very smooth talker. And we know, and I established this in my book, that he's tied to the House of Rothschild. Lionel Rothschild, the cousin of Lionel Rothschild, came to America and wrote a letter back to his cousin Lionel, who was at that time the godfather of the Rothschild family, about how he met with Judah Benjamin and other prominent Jews of the South, and we should support the South, and so on and so forth. So, you know, they had their evil clutches in both sides. And in the South, it was very high level. Judah Benjamin was on Southern currency. Can you believe that? He was on a Southern $2 bill. He was on Southern bonds. He was referred to as Jefferson Davis's pet Jew. And then when the war started, the generals hated him. They felt that he was preventing them from winning the war. Stonewall Jackson threatened to resign if Judah Benjamin was not removed. There were other generals. Beauregard went toe-to-toe with Judah Benjamin. So this man was hated by many prominent Southerners. So eventually Davis had to remove Judah Benjamin from Secretary of War. So what does he do? He makes him Secretary of State. So he's still there at his side, calling the shots. And this is incredible. I mean, this is one of the biggest names in the South in the Civil War. And I had only vaguely heard of him. And then when I started researching him, and much of what I learned come from Jewish sources, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
See? And I even read all the Rothschild letters. They refer to him as he's brilliant. He has a Jewish heart and so forth. It was just shocking to me. But there's no doubt the Rothschilds wanted both sides to wear themselves out fighting. And eventually they would have a central bank in the North and in the South, and they could play that whole balance of power political game that they've always played and continue to play to this day.
Well, you know, when we return in just a minute, I'd like to talk more on that aspect, because we get into the Russian involvement. We're the Tsar of Russia, I think it was Alexander at the time.
Right.
He told Lincoln that he would support the North. If the Rothschilds and the English and the French got involved, and he would support them, and he did so with his navy, and there's something in there so that Rothschild did have involvement, but the Jews must have hated the Russians, and why did they have this horrible infernal hatred for the Russians all the way through the, you know, the last century, and then finally in 1917, as you show in your books, Vladimir Lenin, a Jew, and his aides, Trotsky and such, overthrew the Russians. But they had a purple hatred for the Russians because of the Tsars. And I'd like to get into that a little bit, because people don't understand why they pick nations to destroy. Why have the Jews, I believe, chosen the United States? Why did they choose Germany? What is the cause of this hatred? Could we talk about that when we come back?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, my guest is Mike King. He's the author of two fantastic books. I don't use that word very often, fantastic, but these just are. Planet Rothschild, Volume 1, and Planet Rothschild, Volume 2. You got to have these, folks. You've got to have them. I'm going to tell you how to get them in just a minute. Stay with us, won't you? We'll be right back. Tex Mars here again. Folks, let me tell you how to get these books by Mike King. Planet Rothschild, Volume 1. Planet Rothschild, Volume 2. These are big books. They're about 300 pages each, so 600 solid pages of information. It's more than information, though. It's exciting, true world history. You won't get these from books in your library. You can go through 1,000 books, but Mike King has distilled the truths, and he's put in these books. He's unusually gifted in that way. Now, let me tell you what we're going to do for you here. These books are only $22 each. Each book is about as the size of a couple of other books, two or three books. So you're like buying a whole library or five or six books with these two huge volumes. Now, $22 each or $35 for the entire set. $22 each or $35 for the entire set. You could just get volume one now for $22, or you could get both volumes for $35. Now, I assume if you can afford it, you will get both volumes, if you can afford it. But I know that some of you can't. But in any case, $22 each for Planet Rothschild, volume one. Volume two is also $22. Or get both of them for $35. And that really is a bargain. Now, please add $5 shipping for each order. So if you order one volume, it's $5. If you order two volumes, it's just $5 total. So that would be $40 for both books, including the shipping. Okay? And I'll tell you, we have plenty of copies of these. I suppose that Mr. King can get more for us when we need them. And we're going to keep them in stock here for many months. And we're going to keep promoting these books. Because, you know, so many people have asked me, what have I done on the Rothschilds? Well, you know, I did do Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, and I did Conspiracy World, but those only had pieces. This is a complete compilation. This is the big ones, folks. So, please, order these books. I think you'll really be pleased, and, you know, we're fixing to come up on winter here, and you can get by your fireplace or whatever and curl up and take these books. They're not pocketbooks, so... You're not going to put them in your pocket and take them to the beach with you. But hey, beach time's about over. It's winter time now coming up in a couple more months. But get these books and you'll have a lot of fun reading them. Here's what I do. I get a book like Planet Rothschild and I'll read it four or five times. And you know, I always miss things, little bitty points that Mike King comes out with. And it's just incredible. Little bits of information. And I love this. But you'll want to read it many, many times. I hope you do that with my books. I'm not sure you do, but I think a lot of folks do. And you get so much out of these books, especially the ones that have pictures and text. Pictures and text. You don't get boring and fall asleep, you know. These will keep you awake. Okay. Planet Rothschild, Volume 1. Planet Rothschild, Volume 2. $22 each. Or just phone us or write to us or go to our website. And buy both of them, $35 and $5 shipping. Okay, or $22 and $5 shipping for one of the books. After you've gotten one, you're going to want the second one. You may as well order it, if you can, up front. Now, here's how to order. Just phone us toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. You can go to our website, texmars.com. And you have to be careful how you spell that. It's TEXEMARRS.com or powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com, or write to us, Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. That's 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733, or to text Mars on that same address. We've been here for about 20 years now, and God willing, we'll be here until Jesus returns, or maybe 20 more years. Either one is his choice, not mine, but we'll be here. Now, please, Planet Rothschild, Volume 1 and 2, and we're going to give you a free subscription to our newsletter, Power of Prophecy. I know you'll love it, and we'll give you a free subscription. If you're already getting it, we're just going to extend your subscription. Give you another 6-month subscription. So we're going to keep you going here at Power of Prophecy. And now let's return to our regular program. We have Mike King by telephone here. I don't think we need to you know, invite Jerry or Mike King to come here to Austin. I think, you know, having Mike King and Tex Mars in the same room, you could just blow up this place. You think? You know, Mike, welcome back, my friend.
Okay.
You know, your books are really, a lot of people are going to be, you're going to be answering questions and for many, many months. But the thing about these books is they really are not, it's not questionable. You know, they're not, you've got the facts here. You've got documents.
Oh, yeah.
You got books. Oh. And this is an incredible resource, isn't it?
Yeah, I do not traffic in speculation. I mean, I'm very big on facts. And if there's something that I'm only 80% convinced is a legitimate quote or event or something like that, I will not include it. These are facts. I defy anybody to challenge the truth of any of the positive statements I make in here or of the quotes. I mean, this thing is loaded with quotes from original sources from the people of the times. I mean, I'm looking at one here from the Chicago Tribune, October 1864. The headline reads, "Belmont's Confederate Bonds." I'm just going to read you the first line. It says, "It is perhaps somewhat flattering to our national pride to know that the Rothschilds, who hold up every despotism in Europe, have concluded that it would be cheaper to buy up the Democrat Party and in that way secure the dissolution of the Union than to have their agents in England and France interfere and fight us." So that's an American newspaper accusing the Rothschilds of using their agent, August Belmont, to break up the Union.
That's in the Chicago Tribune, right? And you actually...
Chicago, yep, October 16, 1864. And the beauty with the Internet today, you can go right on there and confirm any statement or fact or quote that I have in this book. So this is an array of facts. I do not deal in speculation or half-truths.
Well, you know, one of the things in your book I've noticed, you were talking about the Reuters, the founder of the Reuters News Service, the world, I mean, that's bigger than Associated Press, is a Jew. And you quoted the Chicago Tribune there. Of course, the Jews now own the Chicago Tribune. So it's
in the New York Times
and the New York Times, the Washington Post. All of these publications are owned by the Jews, and that's why we don't get any news that's accurate in the United States. Now let's go with the question I was going to ask you before we took this break, which is, the Jews have seen to it that Russia had a revolution, a red revolution in 1917, and then came the horrible communism. That meant so many people died and were purged and so forth, went to concentration camps. And then Germany promptly followed, and they were destroyed. It seems that the United States maybe has chosen to be next. Now, what is this? Is this the Jews? They were actually favored in Germany, probably favored in Russia too. And in the United States, there's no doubt that they're favored. Why do they? What is this hatred they have for the countries in which they live? Well, what is going on?
Yeah, well, because the ultimate, at the core of international Jewry, and I'm not saying all Jews believe in this, and I don't think many of them are even aware of it, but at the inner core, the belief is a one-world system, and their Messiah, their version of the Messiah, is the king of that one world. And, I mean, they're open about that. If you Google the term Messiah, or the Hebrew term for Messiah, and read that their concept of the Messiah, and it's world government. I mean, this is part of a millennium-old religion, and that the nations of the world have to be subdued for Yahweh, and then will be brought under the Jewish Messiah. And part of that is the destruction of Christianity, is a large part of that. And even before Christianity, I mean, the destruction of Rome or the destruction of Greece. Eventually, the world has to be worn out and then finally brought under Jewish control and the Messiah. So that's like the religious vision of this thing. Now, of course, we know a lot of the Jews involved in this are not religious at all. Many of them are atheists. But that doesn't really matter because this Jewish version of the Messianic concept, that Messiah is an earthly Messiah. He's a king. Okay? He's not coming from the heavens or a virgin birth or anything like that. So the concept is just as amenable to like a religious fundamentalist orthodox fanatical Jew as it would be to a secular or atheistic one. So it's a vision of world domination. And when you understand that, the hatred of other cultures and nations and religions and intolerance, you know, begins to make sense. And as for the subjugation, I mean, countries like Russia, you know, it's so vast. I mean, that was a big piece of the puzzle. The area itself is so vast and rich in resources, they had to capture it. But then, you know, to divert a bit into my book on Putin, you'll see now that they've kind of beginning to lose control of Russia. That's why there's all this hatred towards Putin. But as to your point, that is what motivates this obsession with destroying their host countries.
Well, you know, when they took over Russia in 1917, of course they killed the family, the whole Tsarist family were murdered. But then the communists, really the Jews, under the disguise of communism, but then they took on and began to destroy the Christian church. So it's not just the government that they, you know, you said it right. It's not just the government, but it's government and church. Those two, those two culture makers, you might say, they just declared war on the Christians of Russia, and millions of Christians went to the camps. So this is in America. I wonder in the United States, will they be able to get their way without a Soviet-style government, or are they going to push that horror on us as well? What do you think?
You know, it's hard to see how their end game is going to go. I mean, you look at a country like Russia. Once they took it over, they now had tens of millions of patriotic, strong Russian white Christians opposing them. So they had to go with a genocide. Here in America, depending how you want to look at it, fortunately or unfortunately, that they don't seem to have anymore. I mean, today's Christianity is so watered down, so pro-Jewish. I wonder if they even see it as a threat anymore. I mean, they definitely want to destroy the final vestiges of it. Whether or not they're aiming for a genocide, I don't know. It just seems at this point that they really don't. There's not much for them to fear anymore.
So, in other words, the church has become Judaism. You know, like Mark said.
Yeah, it certainly has. Yeah,
they've de-Christianized the church.
Many of the Protestant denominations sold their soul, you know, going back to the days of the Schofield Bible. And as far as the Catholics, I mean, they have this Argentinian Marxist in there now, you know, internally destroying the remnants of that church, which was already on its way out anyway. So they've definitely Judaized Christianity. It's really not a force anymore to oppose them.
Hmm. And then, of course, the liberals, the liberal churches, the Methodists and the Lutherans and so forth, Episcopals and whatever, they don't have any power. There's no power there to oppose anything. So, well, I'll tell you what, let's go to another subject here. I'm very intrigued. You discuss something called the League of the Three Emperors. What do you mean by that? The League of the Three Emperors in your books. Tell us about the League of the Three Emperors.
Well, in the 1870s, this was very shortly after the modern German state was consolidated. And they had a Kaiser Wilhelm, but their political leader, the real dynamic political leader of the country was Bismarck, Chancellor Otto von Bismarck. And he knew back then that, you know, the Christian monarchies of Europe were under siege by French and the British working on behalf of the Rothschilds, as well as the internal anarchist and communist Red Revolutions. So what he did is he forged an alliance called the League of the Three Emperors. And the three great empires were the German Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and the Russian Empire. So now you had a solid block extending from the heart of Central Europe all the way across Russia to the Pacific. And they were allied in the League of the Three Emperors. I have a cartoon here from a British newspaper mocking the three emperors that shows a giant Bismarck as a puppet master, and he's controlling these three kings. So you can see how much this was hated, this idea was hated in Rothschild England. So there is no way that a new world order could have come into being until this mighty coalition of empires was broken up and smashed. And this became a primary objective of the agents of the new world order, to cause a divide between these three great allies, who allied themselves for two general purposes. One, to block the British and the French from doing any intrigue in their area of the world. And secondly, they would help each other combat the growing Red Movement in Europe.
So the Red Movements have really, we're talking about communism and the Red Movements, go all the way back really to 1860, even before that, the 1840s. So this has been a long time that we've
been
subject.
Well, even before that, I mean, really, the French Revolution, it was the first major move of this thing, the French Revolution. And then Napoleon got out of hand. They had to destroy him. He was opposed to money lending, and he was a nationalist. And they tried, the Reds tried to assassinate him twice. Eventually, the world ganged up on him, just like they did to Hitler, and they defeated him with Rothschild money. So it goes back even to that time. But by the time the 1850s, 60s rolled around, they were really powerful. They had the globalists, the Rothschilds, had at their service hundreds or thousands of fanatics, red fanatics. I guess you could call them the ISIS of their day. And then they would use these people to kill kings and queens and princes and prime ministers. I mean, the bloodbath was horrific. It was like every couple years, there was a new monarch or prime minister or president being murdered in what were essentially suicide attacks.
Yeah, and I'm amazed. I read your book, these books, and I see this assassination, that assassination. You know, our president, Garfield, and was shot in the back, I believe. And it's an incredible thing, these red assassins. You know, I were talking before the show, even the governor, Huey Long of Louisiana, was shot by a Jew. People, you know, in the state house, he was just shot. All these assassinations by these Jews or their agents, these communist reds, it's just incredible. Just amazing. Well, now...
Yeah, I had no idea it was this bad until I really started digging into this. There is literally not a country in Europe that did not lose a monarch, a prince, or a prime minister to one of these red assassins.
Well, you know, after FDR...
You know, it's always the lone gunman or the lone bomber. Some of these cases was the lone stabber. But these were orchestrated. These were fanatics who made a name for themselves, you know, thinking they were striking a great blow for whatever, humanity or the workers of the world. But that's how it happened. It's just, you could just imagine the destabilizing effects. There was no one that they could not get to.
Mm. Well, you know, after FDR, Truman came into the office of president, and there were attempts on his life. And evidently they were by Jews, by communists. That is, there's a little bit said about that. But I was reading recently, and I know your books cover it too, about Harry Truman, how they tried to kill him. And he had done everything possible for the Jews, but they hated him because of, you know, he failed to carry out the Morgenthau plan to kill off the Germans and things like that. But it seems that, you know, the JFK assassination too, that's covered in your books. How do you see the JFK assassination?
Well, you know, JFK was the last president who really, really stood up to the Israelis. You know, Bush bucked them a little bit, Carter bucked them a little bit, but with JFK, I mean, there's letters, you can find them on the internet, and I quoted them in my book, in the second volume. I mean, he was literally threatening Israeli prime ministers with cutting off aid.
Mm.
If you don't let us in to look at these reactors. I mean, the language was diplomatic, you read the letters, but it was strong. So he definitely went off the script on that one. And then, of course, there was, you know, internally, you know, JFK was a liberal, but he was no communist. You know, he had Hoover, you know, kept the FBI files on all of these internal communists. He would not have gone into Vietnam War, in my opinion. He crossed swords with the CIA, threatened to break the CIA into 100 pieces, as he said. So JFK, for all of his moral flaws and even some of his liberalism, had an independent streak, like his father, who the Jews hated, by the way. And, you know, I believe he was a patriot. And he was the last man in the White House who was his own man. And therein lies the key to understanding the reason why they took them out.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. They take out a president of the United States, and nothing happens. I mean, everybody knows.
And not only that, the 2 days later on national TV, you had Lee Harvey Oswald declaring, and you can see the YouTube of this, he says, "I'm just a patsy. I didn't kill anybody." And then the day after that, he's killed.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Three years after that, the man who killed Oswald, that was Jack Ruby, he was a Jew, 3 years after that, he dies in prison after claiming that he's being injected with some kind of disease. But, you know, they got away with it.
Oh, sure. And, you know, he told Kunstler, the lawyer who interviewed him, Ruby told Kunstler that he did it for Israel, to hide the fact that Israel was involved in the assassination. That's
yeah.
Well, listen, I'm looking at page 247 of volume 2, about 9/11, and there's a very interesting quote from you. It says, quote, 9/11 marks the start of the New World Order's dual endgame for global domination via the encirclement of Russia and China and Israel's drive to dominate the Middle East. 9/11 marks the start of the New World Order's end game. That's an astonishing statement. I absolutely believe it. And you have so much proof here.
I mean, we're just seeing it. I mean, I knew that. I knew it then.
Mm-hmm.
But now you just see everything that has unfolded since that time. I mean, I say the three great turning points in American history were the assassination of McKinley, Pearl Harbor, well, throwing the assassination of JFK, and that one would be a fourth, 9/11, because they just really altered the direction we're going in.
Mm.
But this puts it all together. It's just so incredible, isn't it, Tex, to read, to clearly see the common hand, the same hand behind the French Revolution all through the years and the Civil War and World War II, 9/11, and right up to this day. You know, you read these two volumes, the fingerprints of this thing are unmistakable.
Yeah, they really are. Then you have down at the bottom of that same page, 247, September 11, 2001, five Israeli Mossad agents arrested in connection with the 9/11 attacks. American people don't even know that five Israeli Mossad agents were arrested in your state of New Jersey. That's and they were let go. The FBI was ordered to let these people go. So there's a definite connection there, the 9/11 with Israel. Of course, they're trying to blame it now on who? Saudi Arabia or whatever.
Yeah.
But this 9/11 is very, very significant, isn't it?
Oh, it sure is. And I mean, we have some of the biggest foreign policy gurus in America who in the years prior to 9/11, they openly wrote this. Well, not openly in terms for the general public, but in the elite journals that all the so-called intellectuals read. They wrote about the need to establish domination of the Middle East and Central Asia, and that it would be difficult to do so unless there was some kind of catastrophe. The Project for the New American Century, the neocons with Bill Kristol, they wrote that. Brzezinski in 1998 wrote that, and they referred to Pearl Harbor. This criminal who's the new Secretary of Offense, Ashton Carter,
mm-hmm.
Don't say Secretary of Defense when I refer to that department, the Secretary of Offense, Ashton Carter, back in 98, he wrote about the coming catastrophic death. It's all in my book. But that was the theme. One, we have to do this, and this. And two, however, it's not likely to happen unless there's some big catastrophe. I mean, they're telling you what's coming.
Mm.
Then when 9/11 came, everything changed. I mean, anyone who cannot see how the world has changed since then, I mean, is just blind and not paying attention. There was no way we could have had the Iraq War without 9/11. No way we could have gotten into Afghanistan. No way we could have organized something like the Arab Spring and all these drone bombings, these Predator drone bombings, and this military build up and the stuff that we're doing in Central Africa now. I mean, all of this came up 9/11. 9/11 not only gave us the excuse to go and do these things, but it now created a country in which the president can pretty much do what he wants. And nobody cares anymore because they've already, you know, they've acclimated to tyranny. And look at the abuse we tolerate at the airports. Nobody cares anymore. This could not have happened without 9/11. And on it goes. I mean, the event is huge and just so, on so many levels, it is really, just as predicted, it has reshaped the course of history, and we're still on that trajectory.
Well, Mike, you know, to me, the person who says, you don't really believe that the American government would kill 3,000 of its own citizens on 9/11, you don't really believe that. I think the remedy for those idiots, and that's what they are, and I'm sorry to say that, is to read your two great books. Then they will see that's nothing. 3,000 people are nothing. I mean, they've killed what? Since that time, since 9/11, they've gone on to kill probably 2 or 3 million in the Middle East and can continue to kill them.
You know what, Tex? This is why evil... I won't say evil always wins, but why it wins so often, is because the good guys cannot conceptualize that people could do these things.
I
couldn't do that, so how can other people do that?
That's true.
And they've got to break out of that mentality.
You know, that's a very good point.
They
say, how I wouldn't do that, and I can't imagine our president doing something that vile, that evil. They can't fathom the mind of a psychopath, can they?
No, they can't. And you know what? In a way, that's a little bit of a moral deficiency. I'm not saying that people who don't see it are immoral, but I believe people who really understand the nature of good and evil, people who have achieved the highest level of moral character, and I'm not saying I'm a saint or you're a saint or anything like that, but I think those type of people know that there is evil in the world. I mean, I've always had the ability, Tex, when I come face to face with someone that I know is rotten, I can almost sense it. It's something I can't put my finger on, but I can smell it.
Yes.
This guy's a phony.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I think a person who's really fully developed his moral and his spirit is maybe doesn't have such a hard time believing that that kind of evil exists.
But a person like you, and others that are listening to us, and I have a wonderful audience, they're hurt, they're vexed, they're tormented by the knowledge that there are people that would do these terrible things. And your books, that's what they really, they prove these things beyond a shadow of a doubt. And I want to thank you for, we're running out of time here, but Mike, I want to thank you for putting out Planet Rothschild Volume 1 and Planet Rothschild Volume 2. I can't wait to see what you're working on next. Maybe I won't even ask you about it, but it's got to be great.
Yeah.
But I want to thank you.
Well, I put out my periodic articles that people could see at tomatobubble.com.
Oh, yes. Now, we need to, it's on tomatobubble.com, right?
That's right.
Tomatobubble.com.
Listeners, they can get a free report. On every page, they'll see a box. It's called How to Respond to an Anti-Conspiracy Theorist. And it summarizes all the main... You know, all the stupid things that people say to discredit so-called conspiracy theory, and you know how to respond to that. People really found that report useful, and it's free.
That's right. Tomatobubble.com. Folks, that is Mike King's website. I was just on it. In fact, I think it was last night I was on tomatobubble.com. So you'll want to get on that and see what other resources he has. But we have Planet Rothschild Volume 1 and 2. For $35 and $5 shipping and handling. Mike, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Tex, it's a pleasure. I look forward to doing this again.
All right. God bless you. Folks.
God bless you.
It's been wonderful having you as my guest, too, here on Power of Prophecy. Please tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy. Mm-hmm.